Mr. Pump, eat.
The signal you are receiving is coming from deep inside of FEMA Region 1, well within the battle lines of the municipal corporation known as the Commonwealth of Taxachusetts. Radiating out to the darkest corners of Al Gore's internet from our secret broadcast bunker, cleverly disguised as a middle-class living room, this is Red Pill Politics. And welcome back for hour number two of Red Pill Politics. If you are just tuning in, where the hell you been? We started an hour ago, 11 a.m. Eastern, 10 a.m. Central, every single Sunday. And today is March 31st. Feeling a little bit like spring out there. Nice sunny day up here. We're in the 50s, so very spring-ish. The buds started to come out a little bit in recent weeks, and we had a kind of a cold snap, but I think it's happening now. The lawns are greening up, and a lot of water in the ground. I hope we don't get a lot of rain this spring, because the ground's already full up here, but we're going to get going on our garden talks. Are going to be pretty regular this week. I just had a couple of tips that I wanted to share with you. And one of them is in preparation because it's going to require an action in the future for you to set up. We got another caller on the line. I want to make sure we get to everybody here. I've got Steve from Florida calling in. How are you, Steve?
Hey, Dave. How are you?
Good, good. Happy Easter to you.
Easter, yes.
Or transgender Visibility Day, I guess it is now, according to the Biden Easters. Well, what a slap in the face that
Democrats
is.
Democrats are out in full force.
Yeah, couldn't they have done that, like, on the 30th? Or,
about,
you know,
like,
one more day. You know, or even just put it off one more day and do it on April 1st.
Then at least we could say it's an April Fool's joke, right?
Yeah, we had some plausible deniability then. crazy stuff, but they don't care.
I just wanted to wish Cindy a happy birthday and everyone a happy Resurrection Sunday for starters. And, it's pretty sickening, isn't it, Dave, what they're doing? They are doing it on purpose to poke at the Christians because they're demons. It's always funny how they don't believe that Jesus exists, but they love to mess with, like, God and Jesus and his followers the most.
Yeah, and, you know, they attack the most private and intimate parts of our lives. You know, that's what infuriates me the most. You know, I was never wealthy. I never expect to be wealthy. I define wealth entirely different than, you know, some people do. And where I have assigned wealth is in those actual relationships that I have with people, because that's what matters, not the things and the gadgets and the trinkets that you can accumulate in life, but, you know, the relationships, the joy that I get when I play with my new grandson. Can't buy that in any Walmart anywhere. And that's what is under attack. And that infuriates
me.
I can deal with a little bit of economic stress. Okay, I can. That's fine. But I just come unglued when I see them going after kids. And I envision my own kids and grandkids as part of that. It just makes me so darn mad. And it is truly evil, cult-like activity from the people that support this. It's the only way you can describe it as cult-like.
Yeah, it's demonic. It's straight from the pits of hell. Satan is always trying to take over what God intends for good, or what, you know, and there's no bigger or better day than his resurrection and the resurrection day to do that on, because as everyone knows, I mean, what good would Jesus be if he didn't raise himself from the dead, you know, and conquer death and the grave and give us all a chance at salvation. You know, it's tough out there living a good Christian life. And it makes it harder when they do stuff like this, to your point, because you try to keep control of your temper. But these people, man, they keep pushing your buttons on purpose, don't they?
Yeah. But, you know, you got people out there like the, you know, progressives who are going to look at this and they're just going to giggle and think it's great. Then you're going to have people like you and I who are just purely offended at it right up front and openly. But then you got a whole bunch of people that may not, like I said, might be milquetoast Christians, or maybe not even Christians at all. Maybe they're not believers. But, you know, what do you think they're thinking when they look in at this? You know, the necessity of making, you know, taking their political agenda and sandwiching it right in the middle of a Christian holiday. What do you think the fence riders, how are they going to perceive this?
Well, you know, they often are pretty quiet about things. That's why they ride the fence. They don't take a side because they're scared to be confrontational. So I don't anticipate them being any different on this, honestly.
But, no, I not openly and outwardly, but I'm wondering, if, you know, if you could get in their head psychologically, do you think this is going to, who do you think it's going to favor? The administration and their pushing of this agenda? Or those not necessarily right leaning?
I would say they'd be with us.
Yeah.
You know, I'll give you an example. I talked to a girl last night about this, and she was like dumbfounded by it. And other people who don't even necessarily call themselves Christians, they're like, this is just too far. You know, it's just a blatant attack, a blatant button push. They're just screwing with people, and they're trying to aggravate and cause problems, you know? And I don't think most people really like that kind of behavior. So even if you don't necessarily agree with Jesus and God and Christianity, you can see it for what it is. So I think people are smart enough to see that.
No, I do believe that that is an awakening that's starting to happen, because they've gotten so fanatical about it that it's unavoidable. It really is unavoidable. And you're absolutely correct. They're staying quiet. And they've had the propensity to do that right along. These are people that probably got vaccinated just to, you know, save their job and not have people point at them and call them names. So they have made some mistakes that I think there's internal regret that they have, and along with it, animosity towards the government that forced this upon them. So, you know, with every push, there's a couple going over the edge saying, that's it. You know, this is not the America that I believe in, and this is not me. This is not my agenda. And they're losing votes. I do see the black community is, for the first time in a long time, there's noteworthy pushback on Democrats. If you can go and search the interweb for some of their get-togethers and rallies, they're getting shouted down and many times by the black Democrats that they've been lying to for decades. They're losing it.
Oh, yeah. I mean, there's no group of people that the Democrats have used and abused more than the black population, you know? But, you know, in general, I think some people are waking up, but I do fear, on a mass note still, there is a problem with denial. You know, in psychoanalytic theory, a psychological defense we all use, right, at times to reduce our anxiety when something feels like particularly disturbing is denial. And, you know, in other words, in layman's terms, people are using denial as a defense mechanism because they're not able to cope with reality. Yeah. And reality has really become very overwhelming. And a lot of people are already not very well. They're on meds. They have anxiety to begin with. And so you add on what's going on in the world here. And most people choose to ignore stuff, even if they do, say, agree with us on, say, this issue about what Biden is doing and what the Democrats are doing, whether it's in New York where they're trying to light up the World Trade Center in rainbow colors, or, you know, or Biden saying that he's banning any religious symbols at the White House, and, you know, making everything all about a made-up Easter bunny and Easter egg hunt. You know, but the churches are responsible for that, too, because they're also doing their Easter egg hunts and pretending, oh, it's okay, and it's a way of reaching out to the world and bringing them to Jesus. Where in the Bible does it say to do worldly things and do stuff that's like the opposite of telling people about Jesus? to bring them to Jesus.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. We find now that many churches are complicit in the trafficking of the illegals. They're right. Very important part of that in some cases. So, yeah, we've really lost our way in many respects. But, you know, the tightening of the noose here, people are starting to feel it. And everyone's got their own breaking points when the pinch is hard enough. To wake them up. But we've already, and I going back to the first caller, you know, I think it may be a little too late for a totally peaceful transition back. Because I do believe they've grabbed so much power and authority, they've become so egotistical that they're at a point where if they can't keep control, they'll burn the house down. I've said that before. I don't think they'll give
crash
back.
Into bridges.
Yeah, crash into bridges, say, oh, the economy failed because you and I didn't purchase correctly, or climate change. So for some reason, they'll pin the economic collapse on us. And then, of course, problem, reaction, solution. There we are. We got our social credit score. You know, should we be worrying about that? It wasn't too long ago. People called us conspiracy theorists. And now one of the things that I had in my notes was a woman who made it in the news. The FBI is knocking on her door because she posted something the government didn't like on social media. Crazy. Well, I don't know.
Yeah, and I believe she was a Muslim woman, if I'm not mistaken. So, I mean, I don't know what she posted, but, I mean, people in this country are free. They're allowed to say stuff, you know, and... you know how I feel about the Islamization of America and whether Muslims, because they're, you know, I know they're not loyal to the Constitution. They're loyal to Sharia law. So I don't really think there's a place in America where they should have any safe harbor. I don't think they belong here. You know, it's like letting your enemy in. It's foolish. But that's another conversation entirely. But getting to the last caller and maybe one closing comment, if I could, Dave. You know, I like the last caller's passion. I like how he speaks up. And is just trying to be like, are these politicians going to do anything? Or are we going to drain the swamp? Like, what's going on here? Are we going to just pretend that they're going to do something and keep letting them get off the hook? You know, he is right about that. I mean, people often look at people like him and myself, I know from experience, as annoying complainers. But, you know, when we actually do try to do stuff, they never listen to us, too. They turn against us. They'll turn everybody against us. And they'll use that as a crutch. So they don't have to do anything. And some of these people are the people who preach the most throughout the world, telling you to take action, but they don't practice what they preach. So don't be those people is all I wanted to say about that.
Yeah, we got to become also, masters at hitting that political pain button. As soon as one of our, I ain't going to call him an elected official, one of our public servants, if you campaigned and you raised your hand and took that oath, this is directed right at you, man. We have got to hit that political pain button. As soon as they make the wrong decision, make them famous. Begin the campaign that will remove them from office if their infraction is so severe. But we don't. We go in and we beg, please don't do this to us anymore. Please consider not taxing us.
Even worse, we let them fix the election so they don't get removed from power. I mean, we really have to. Yeah. You know, it's like you said, Dave, have we gotten past that point where any kind of peaceful resolution here is just not possible? Because if they're fixing all the elections, they're all working with China. I mean, where does that leave us? You have to go in and remove these people by whatever means necessary or else nothing changes, right? And I think that's why the caller before was so amped up about it or everything.
It is that election. That's the democratic tool. That's democracy, the tool that we have. And if it is thoroughly corrupted and we just do not have a chance of getting in our people, not in the numbers needed to hold a majority ever, you know, if that is purely corrupted, then we've lost the peaceful part because that's part of the peaceful return to limited government. And if that ever becomes completely unavailable, that's your hope for a peaceful or semi-peaceful transition back are over. because that's there, and that's part of our Constitution. That's how we make decisions. Although we are a republic, that's the democracy, the tool where the majority of us get together, and it's under the assumption that the First Amendment is healthy, that we're able to have vibrant public debate and really chew on the issues of the day, so that we as a nation can collectively, and I use that word very, very seldom, but in this case, that once we are a fully informed public, can make the best decisions at the ballot box. But all of those little elements that are contributors to our democracy, the tool of democracy, the election, they're corrupted. So it's not just the core, not just the election itself, is all the peripheral things have also been soiled with corruption.
Absolutely.
It's real cleaning, yep. House cleaning, it's in order.
Well, you know, another thing too, and this is the last thing I wanted to say, and then I'll move on and let the callers call in here. You know, Trump, for example, the Trump camp just called out Biden to apologize for declaring Easter Trans Day of Visibility. So On one hand, you got that and you see it on its face and you say, oh, that's nice. The Trump campaign is demanding an apology from President in name only Joe Biden, you know, for designating March 31st as Transgender Day of Visibility, coinciding with Easter Sunday. And so you're like, but you look at, you know what Trump's doing there, right? If you follow the guy, I mean, let's not kid ourselves. Whether you like him or not, he's playing for votes from the Christians, because he also sponsored Dr. Oz, who sponsors trans stuff. So If you're going to back a candidate like that on one hand, don't expect me to forget about it when you come and try to call out the Biden camp for doing that. You know, when you're selling LGBT products on your store, and, you know, I mean, we have to call a spade a spade. So I don't think that's something that people are talking about. And you look at, like, how, you know, the Democrats and the left are like, oh, well, we've been doing this since 2009. I'm like, oh, I guess that makes it right then, right? Well, you know what? Jesus has been doing this for 2,000 years. So I think we got you beat, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, but that precedent-setting stuff, they love to point back at that, which is why I said we got to get better at hitting that political pain button. It's got to be instantaneous. Because when you don't, and you allow these little things, and they may seem, you know, we were warned not to tolerate the tyrannies while they were tolerable. And it's because it's setting the groundwork for grander tyranny. So we have, like a fire in your house. I always said this, you don't walk by an outlet that's sparking, say, well, just a small fire. You stamp it out every time we find it. And we've got to, got to wake up and be assertive. You can be assertive. Civil disobedience, by virtue of its name, is nonviolent. We just got to stop participating with some of the worst out there. But the election is not one of them. That's where, you know, I agree, like I said, with 90% of everything Chance said, and his passion, his angst over this, is all justified. But he said he's through voting. And, you know, I was both ways.
I agree with that.
You know, as much as it seems like your vote is worthless, it's really not. Because if we are trying to protect, make our elections right, we've got to turn out in massive numbers, because that exposes election rigging.
The solution isn't to give up and not show up. It's to fix things so that when you do show up, that it matters.
Yeah. Absolutely. All right. What's your final thoughts for the folks?
That's basically it for now, Dave. Just, you know, happy Easter, happy Resurrection Sunday. Keep taking on the tyrants at every turn. Don't be scared of being called confrontational. Stand up for what's right in a world gone wrong, and you will be rewarded in heaven, because all these things of this world pass away, but God's word never passes away. Till next time, Dave, stay American, stay patriotic, and above all else, stay godly.
Peace, everybody. All right. Thanks for calling in, Steve. That's Steve from Florida. We got to stand bold, not be... Their attacks is a badge of honor. I really do. You don't get flack if you're not over the target. I tell people this, to get elected in the local government, I'm always trying to persuade people, get involved, get in there. Things would be a lot different in your town if your boards were full of patriots. So, you know, I'm always pushing people to do that. And every now and again, you know, someone will get swept into office and, you know, they come back and they say, everybody hates me. And they think I'm going, oh, you poor baby. Well, that's so unfair. No, I say, well, congratulations. Way to go. Way to go. You are going in there to reform them because you didn't like what they were doing. You're going in to expose the ones that are left there and get them out. They're supposed to be angry at you. And when they do lash out, and when they do try to ignore you from their private discussions, you just take note of it. Okay, you just make note of who's talking about what, about a votable issue. In the moment a quorum of your board discusses a votable issue outside of a public meeting, you file charges for civil conspiracy. You file with State Ethics Commission, and you turn their life into a living hell. Okay, one person does that. One person. Okay, you can really be the turd in their punch bowl and give them something to cry about. They will be on Amazon ordering themselves an industrial strength cry closet because they're going to need it. Because you're going in there to reform them. So congratulations if you're one of those people who got swept in the local government and all the tyrants didn't like you. Good for you. Good for you. Oh, for crying out loud. Yeah, don't come, you know, don't whine about that. They're supposed to be angry. You know, like you catch a fish and you get them up close to the boat. That's when they fight the hardest, right? Well, you're right in their nest now. You're right in their nest. And they're going to fight like hell. They're not going to invite you to their little circles. Don't expect it. Oh, just know the law. Now, what state ethics requires of them as public servants, in the moment they screw up, there you are to push that political pain button and make it sting. And this isn't, you know, I'm not just firing from the hip here. Yeah, I worked with a couple of people in my town. Got a guy convicted of a civil conspiracy, I think a $20,000 fine, violations of open meeting law, civil rights infractions. Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Can happen. You can do it. It doesn't, you know, use their own tools against them. And they become so arrogant, it's pretty easy to do many times. They've gotten sloppy. Okay, let's go to another call here. We have now got Art Georgia. How are you this morning, Art?
Hey, good morning, brother. Just to kind of touch on what was his name, Steve there was talking about.
Steve from Florida, yes.
Anybody that knows me knows that I'm not a Christian. They know that I'm deeply spiritual, and I have a very devout path that I follow, and I do take my understanding of law, divine law, directly from the Torah itself. And so I'm kind of an Old Testament kind of guy, if you will. But I will never wear the label Christian because I'm not, like you call them, milk toast. That's just not me. But I have what I believe in. And, you know, I kind of have to disagree on one point, and that is that we, people like me, I guess, are afraid of confrontation. That's not true. If I were afraid of confrontation, I wouldn't do what I do. I wouldn't say the things that I say. I wouldn't be out there trying to help get a very strong constitutionally minded individual elected as our new sheriff here to try to unseat a three-generational dynasty here in my county, and that's what we've got right here. We've got a multi-generational dynasty in the sheriff's department, and we're trying to unseat that because of the corruption that's going on. And it's difficult. We're fighting against family recognition, name recognition, and the status quo, which it seems like the black majority here, not that we have a black majority, but the majority of the black population here in our county seems to be convinced that, you know, our current sheriff is the only real option we got, and that's not true. And this is what we're fighting against. But, you know, you also made the comment about peaceful, standing up peacefully and all of that. Let's not forget what John F. Kennedy said. And this was the main reason why I called, because I want people to understand that we are very close to this point. Those who make peaceful revolution impossible make violent revolution inevitable. This is what we're facing. We are almost there.
Because you can't look to the courts and think you're going to get justice, as we see now that, you know, you can go in with a stack of evidence and a judge can just say, well, I'm not allowing that. The judge can make a ruling and say, well, I've decided to default you. You're guilty. You know, a jury will just decide how much you owe. All right. So the due process part of our judicial branch of government in its entirety is independable. We cannot count on that to protect ourselves. So you are 100% correct. And in that Kennedy quote is right on target, too. And we're at that precipice. I don't know that there's any direction that we can go as an aggrieved American to find due process and justice. Regulatory change, absolutely.
And this is what we're faced with. We're either faced with a peaceful revolution where we transition back to the original intent of our founding, or we end up with a violent revolution with blood in the streets. And I don't want to see that. I do not want to be out there having to literally fight against fellow Americans. I don't want to do that. I mean, I will use everything I learned in the military to make what I believe in happen, but I don't want to have to go that route if we can avoid it. And, you know, this fellow that I'm supporting for sheriff, he believes the same way I do. He is right there with me. He's been to my house. We've sat down. We've had conversations. We went to a meet and greet yesterday together, and we had a great conversation going there and coming back. And he's right there with us. He believes in the Constitution. He believes in our original founding and all of this. And this is what he wants to get back to. And he's made it very clear to the people that if he is elected, if he's given the honor to be our new sheriff, he wants everybody to understand that that's not his office. That's our office. Right. And he wants to be there for us in total transparency. That's why I'm supporting this guy, because we have finally found someone here in this county that actually has the guts to stand up. And he's actually made the comment that he would be, that the sheriff is the only constitutionally elected law enforcement official within the county, and he understands that authority. And he's got other sheriffs in other counties endorsing him.
I was going to ask you and press you on a little bit is nothing builds a crowd like a crowd. And I've actually put a fair amount of thought into that, this whole subject of running for sheriff. And here in the Commonwealth of Massachusetts, we have a need for constitutional sheriffs. But, you know, strategically, what about running as a slate? Because nothing builds a crowd like a crowd. And what if, you know, you look at each election cycle and every sheriff's seat that is up and go after it, put someone up and challenge each one of them every time, but make them part of a slate, a movement in the state of Georgia that exists to specifically go after these sheriff's seats over and over and over again until you get them all out. So you don't have just one candidate. You have a candidate as part of a movement and grow this as a statewide initiative to fix your county sheriffs.
Yeah, he's actually, during the announcement, the rally for when he announced his that he was going to be running, He actually had sheriffs from other counties come and speak on his behalf. And here's the kind of man that you're looking at. This is the kind of man that you can elect. This is the kind of man, you know, knowing, looking at his 20-year record and all of that. So we're trying to lead by example here in our county.
Good deal. Well, that's some good news. I'm glad to hear that's happening there in Georgia. We'll have to get some updates from you in the future here. We got a break coming up. Art, thank you for the call. That was Art from Georgia. We got a break here. Stay with us. Hit the share button. We'll be right back. This is Red Pill Politics, and you're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Swear I spend more Sundays drunk off my ass than I have in church. Hardcover King James, only been saving dust on the nightstand. And I don't know what to say. By the time I fold my hands, I only talk to God when I need a favor.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Find your inner rebel at Dixie Republic, the world's largest Confederate store, located in Travelers Rest, South Carolina. The anti-white, anti-Christ, anti-Southern world ends at the asphalt. Welcome to God's country. Log on to DixieRepublic.com to view our Southern merchandise, from flags to t-shirts to artwork. At the store, browse through our extensive collection of belt buckles and have a custom-made leather belt handcrafted in our Johnny Reb's Gun and Leather Shop. That's DixieRepublic.com, where you can meet all of your Southern needs.
Support those that support the network. Support Dixie Republic at DixieRepublic.com. Email ProudSouthern123@gmail.com and let them know that RBN sent you.
Are you one of the millions of people who feel like there is a dark cloud hanging over their heads whenever they're using pharmaceutical drugs? For some, the short-term relief can turn into an opioid addiction nightmare. Have you ever wondered why CBD oil is a billion-dollar industry? It's because it works better than opioids and is actually healthy for you. However, CBD oil is stripped of all other helpful compounds found in the hemp plant. According to neuroscientists, the whole hemp plant, otherwise known as hemp paste, is even more effective than the chemically processed CBD oil. Are you ready to take back your health? You can try hemp paste for the price of a cup of coffee.
Hemppaste.com/RBN. Free shipping on orders over $50. See the banners for hemp paste at republicbroadcasting.org and visit hemppaste.com/RBN.
People often write to tell us what has happened for them since starting Extendivite. Allow me to read a few highlights. Extendivite works in keeping my blood pressure in the normal range. I have been using Extendivite for many years. Great product. I use regularly and I rarely get sick. This product has relieved what appeared to be angina pain in my chest and shortness of breath after climbing stairs. I'm quite happy about it. My husband, son, and I have been using this product for a few months now, and we have noticed an improvement in our joints and blood pressure. To order, call 1-877-928-8822 or visit extendivite.com. That's extendivite.com.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
I'm so excited to have you as part of the Wild Pastures family, and we look forward to bringing you the pasture-raised meats that you and your family will love. Now, we started Wild Pastures because so many of my clients would tell me they just couldn't find high-quality pasture-raised meats. And even when they did, it was so expensive that they couldn't afford to eat it regularly. Now, I'm not talking about the bottom-of-the-barrel healthy meats that have claims like natural or free-range or even cage-free, terms that were actually created by the industrial food industry to make us feel all warm and fuzzy about buying their low-quality products. I'm talking about truly nourishing pasture-raised meats, the kind that you'll never really find in a grocery store. Our farmers are doing things beyond organic. Our beef is 100% grass-fed and grass-finished and raised on pastures free from chemicals and other pesticides. Our chickens are 100% pasture-raised, where they get their natural diet of grass and forage and insects. We will never settle for free range, which is actually one of the most deceptive terms in the chicken industry. In fact, less than 0.1% of the chicken consumed in the United States is truly pasture-raised in the way that ours is. And our pork is 100% pasture-raised as well. So if you care about where your food comes from, then you have definitely made it to the right place. As a Wild Pastures member, you'll be supporting the most highly principled farmers in America and getting the most nutrient-dense, nourishing, and sustainable meats in the world. I'm confident you'll love being part of our mission at Wild Pastures, and you will really love the delicious, nourishing meats that we're going to deliver straight to your door.
Visit republicbroadcasting.org and click the Wild Pastures banner ad. Secure a shipment today. Beef, poultry, and pork raised the way nature intended.
Show, folks. Final segment here. This is Red Pill Politics. You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network at republicbroadcasting.org. Please do go over, check it out. Lots of great programmers. There's an archive of all the shows, not just this one, but all of them. So find some that you like, leave a comment, share them around on social media, and do hit that donation button. And check for the monthly specials. There's always a special fundraiser out there, whether it's a book of the month. There's always something going on. So stop back frequently and support us as you can. Donations, big or small, are greatly appreciated. $5 a month goes a long way when these guys have to sit down, do the budgeting here, and pay for services. To know that a collection of the audience has donated that little bit each month, right? The price of a coffee pack of smokes, okay, put together, actually pays for some of the services required to put this signal out. So give big, give small, give as you can. And if you can't, you can still support what we do by sharing those links around, all right? Find some businesses that could benefit by some advertising. Have them get in touch with us here at the station. The number's right there. Have a mutually beneficial contract. Let the free market do its thing. All right? We get a little bit of advertising revenue, and you get some advertising. Works pretty good. Check it out. And for those that want to really get involved, and as you know, I suggest you do, there's a couple ways you can do that. You can go to redpillpolitics.chattango.com. There's a chat group there, and as well as the live stream. I put out a live stream of every week's broadcast on Rumble. All right, hang out in the text chat there, share links, make sure you put them down in the permanent comments, if you will, so that those resources travel with the video. Okay, pretty easy stuff, right? Hit that thumbs up button, subscribe, notification, so you know when we're broadcasting. Our other snarky musings, all right? Love to have you on board, and redpillpolitics.tv is my website. Get on that mailing list, and let's do it. Let's take this country back. We're not going to stop seeing the insane, the things that defy logic, those insane attacks, whether it's on Christians or white people or anything. Your intolerance of illegal aliens, right? If you're black or brown or any color and you happen to not like your country being invaded, you're going to be a target too. They're going to call you names. All right. You may not want your kid to be sexualized and predisposed to being molested by perverts. That's okay for you to have that opinion and want to protect your children from that. But they're going to call you names. That's okay. Let them. Give them their First Amendment right to show that they are perverts. All right. That's what I say. It makes me, it's like chewing on foil to listen to these people. But you don't hear me say, you know, shut them up. Don't let them speak anymore. No, I was at one point one of those people that said, you know, why do we let people like that get up and lie? And I realized that, you know, it's so everyone can hear the lie. But the expectation is that you do something afterwards, okay? You don't just get lied to, realize you've been lied to. So, well, okay. All right. Well, see you tomorrow. All right, why the next lie? Unbelievable. I don't know. I'm going to get caught up on calls here. Looks like Tom from Utah will be on next. Tom, how are you today?
Howdy. Hey, I keep waiting to hear somebody speak to the issue of efficiency when food resources become, how they say, premium. Does anybody know how to become efficient?
Well,
I think right now it's time to start.
I guess that depends on whether we've got to decide on how much government should be included in agriculture, because you know, you bring up an important word, and I'm glad you do, efficiency. Government really was never meant to be efficient. In other words, to be quick. All right, they're meant to be frugal, spend our tax dollars wisely, but the wheels are supposed to grind slowly so that there's no shocks in the system, no surprises. So efficiency in government is a discussion in and of itself. Efficiency within our food supply, the efficient use of resources in those energy inputs in order to create that food should be efficient, and that should be left to free market forces and let farmers do what farmers do best. And that's my thoughts on the word efficiency with respect to our food supply, is that we got to get it out of government's hands, who is hardly efficient, unless it's efficient in a negative way, and get it back into the hands of those that actually grow the food and transport it around this nation.
Actually, I was on both sides of that factor. I initially was working for the Department of Agriculture, going around requiring all my fellows to medicate their livestock and use the chemicals on their food production. And when I ran dairy, I began to see the problem that I had been creating initially. And then, in fact, is that we are forcing people, and of course, it's all to justify the inspector or the veterinary practitioner. You got to justify his existence, right? So you got to make sure that we medicate our livestock, we spray our product. Otherwise, there would be no need for that inspector or that. Veterinary pathologist.
Yeah, but our inspectors are really, you know, what you described in their duties isn't so much an inspector as it is an enforcing agent, you know, enforcing, you know, that crops be sprayed with certain things and handled a particular way. You know, those are enforcement mechanisms where if you're going to have a Department of Agriculture at all, I would think that it would be to monitor food, you know, for things like diseases and pathogens. You know, if something is discovered on a farm, it's not always because they were irresponsible in some way. You know, diseases and things like that just are a fact of life. And in particular with imports, because now you have the chance of bringing in something non-native that could go wild. But, you know, that's what inspectors should be doing to make sure that there are not contaminants, that we're not spreading disease and blight around the country. But they shouldn't be dictating much of anything else. The callers earlier, maybe you can comment on what you think of this as far as truth and labeling, things like that. You know, your common sense individual looks at this as very intuitive, is I should be able to pick up any product and read its label and know what it's made of and where it came from. Everything that a consumer might want to know about a product, especially food. You know, how is it that we got a system that avoids those truths in labeling, are supposed to be doing something for our best interest? You know, and I forget what the budget for the Department of Agriculture is, but it is huge, and I'm not seeing huge benefits.
Well, what's really curious is when you realize a veterinary pathologist is determined to keep an animal healthy enough to go to market. So profit is made in health, in veterinary pathology or veterinary science. But on the other side of that picture, profit is made in sickness when it comes to the human being. Mm-hmm. So if you want truth, corner your veterinary doctor into a closet and maybe he'll tell you the truth. But not so if you go to your human practitioner.
Yeah, so they just want to keep the thing alive until it gets to slaughter. And they're not so much worried about its contents and what might be inside of it, only that it's able to walk up the ramp to slaughter under its own power. Unreal. So we've lost touch as we have commercialized of food and is controlled at the government level. They're going to decide what is best for us all around. What we know about our food and what we don't will be because they have deemed it so. We're no longer the food basket of the world. We used to have that stake to claim, but you know, we're a net importer at this point, and the food that's coming in is not under. See, everyone that buys all their junk food and whatnot right now thinks that the food they're eating was grown or produced or packaged or processed under the regulatory burden that we have here in the United States. And it is not like that. And the only time it works the other way around where it's in our benefit is when we get food that was grown in a country that has banned GMOs. We're one of the few nations out there that just sucks this stuff up. There's entire nations that have banned it in their country. good on them. I got one more caller. Art, do you have any last?
I just encourage people to become either self-sufficient, producing their own, or at least buy or utilize what is locally grown, and then also make sure you get a handbook showing the foods that are natural out in the environment, you know, the weeds you can eat.
Yeah. Yeah. There's more stuff that you can eat than things you can't. I often tell people get a field guide on poisonous plants and venomous animals so that you know what things out there will kill you. but yeah, right. You're absolutely right. There's no reason people up here in this area where I'm at should ever starve to death, but yet they will through lack of knowledge. All right, good stuff. Thank you very much for the call. I appreciate it. Sound advice. Go ahead, real quick.
One other issue. If you eat in compliance with your biological design, you can get by on 500 calories, not 2,000.
Yeah. I had a listener tell me to get the book, Eating Right for Your Blood Type, I think it was called.
Well, if that book was true, I'd be dripping blood from my lips because I'm an O negative.
Yeah, there's definitely something there.
This, but that's nonsense. You need to eat right for your physiology.
But if you're eating foods that conflicts with your body chemistry, I can see where that it's a problem. Uh-huh. But we definitely got to get away from the processed food, because it's all got loaded with preservatives. As you just mentioned, a lot of the regulatory stuff is there to make sure that it lasts to the shelf to where you buy it and it still technically looks like food. You know, it's not dead, ain't mold, and it's not, you know, that's about it. All those preservatives, we should, as a nation, should not be at all surprised that the youth of today are a bunch of fat bodies. Their bodies are literally swelling up in reaction to preservatives. I mean, I'm thinking what your immune system would do when you, things that, you know, literally will keep a piece of meat from rotting is now inside your body because you ate it. And they wonder why they're not healthy. They don't feel good. They're obese. Your body's swelling up as a reaction. It's an inflammatory reaction to eating poisonous preservatives. Unbelievable. I don't know. Well, thank you for the call. Definitely have got to, people have got to realize if you don't have your health, you don't have nothing. And there's no guarantees. There's no guarantees in life, you know, by what you just pick up at your supermarket. Most of that stuff is there because it grows quickly, not because it's good for you. Let's see if we can get caught up here. I think we got Scott from Nevada. I think Scott's still with us.
Yeah, hello, Dave. You hear me okay?
Yeah, coming through loud and clear.
Okay, well, I was just thinking of something rolling around in my brain as you were talking, and it comes from Professor Carol Quigley, whatever else you want to think of him. He wrote a lot of real cool stuff, I think. He had a book titled The Evolution of Civilizations, and it was, I believe, a freshman textbook at School of Foreign Service, Georgetown. And there's a line in there that will not leave my head, and here it is. So as human societies, we form instruments to achieve popular goals. So, for example, let's say in the early 1900s, didn't they do the Food and Drug Administration, for example, right? And that's an excellent example. And then he said, okay, so we form instruments to achieve popular goals. And here's the punchline. Over time and without exception, these instruments will turn into institutions directly opposed to the purposes for which they were formed. Now, isn't that a hell of a sentence?
Yeah, it harkens back to the 45 goals of communism. There's language in there very, very similar to that.
Yeah, well, he's saying that's just how things go throughout history. And, you know, you think about things like 9-1-1 could not have happened, just simply couldn't have happened the way it did, without the full involvement of the Pentagon. So here we have the highest military authorities facilitated an attack on our country, right? So, I mean, the institutions of the United States, or the government of the United States, the institutions have become thoroughly corrupted and directly opposed to the purposes for which they were formed. So that's
That's the danger. It's that thing called the deep state now. And a lot of people debate over what is the deep state, and they think it's just a career politician, but it's not. It's all those agencies and things that are not government. They're governmental. They're government-like. They often create policy, ordinance, and code, regulation, but never anything called law. But they're the most abusive to our freedoms and liberties. And they become the governing power in the background. It's like the tide coming in and out. And your president, whoever sits in that seat in their cabinet, are the seaweed in that tide. We've got to get rid of and break down the deep state. And I call it the new Soviet, because it is. If you look at what a Soviet system, it's a top-down pyramid-shaped power structure where things rain down upon the people through agencies, policies of agencies.
Yeah, the administrative state. You've got to learn how to protect yourself from the administrative state for sure.
Yes.
But just, you know, there's something else he said I studied Quigley, actually, as from Chris Hinckley talking about the administrative state. It's where I got going into Quigley. I listened to his lectures. I read what he had to say, and I listened to him.
Mm-hmm.
What else did he, towards the end of his life, I think they killed him after he talked about the Federal Reserve and the Western banking system in a lecture in 1976, and he was dead shortly after. I think they bumped him off, but that's, I haven't heard anybody else say that, but that's what I think. But what did he say? He said, I recommend you do what the first century Christians did, form separate communities. And that was about his final talk. Form separate communities, do what the first century Christian church did. Okay, Dave, I'll let you go. Love your shows, man. Always get you.
All right. Thank you very much for the call. It was Scott from Nevada. Yeah, absolutely. Regionalization is an essential component of communism. And that's just what the caller was describing from Quigley, is a form of regionalization. And we see that permeate everything. I've talked to you before 1,000 times about the transition that we're seeing with going from county government and getting rid of actual county government, county commissions, county roads. All those things are gone and gobbled up and absorbed by these new miraculous things that they said, well, if only we had some sort of a regional entity where we could pull our resources and get things more efficiently and cheaper. You know, pigeonhole that grant money to our initiatives so they were more efficiently spent on what? Not what the people want, what the deep state wants. So, yeah, we went from county governments to regional planning commissions, right? I don't know. I have got to apologize. We've got one caller we left on the line this week, Mike from Kentucky. Sorry we missed you, brother. But I'm out of time. I've got some bumper music coming in my ear. I want to thank everyone out there for tuning in to Red Pill Politics and supporting us here at Republic Broadcasting Network. Please be safe out there. Eat well. Be safe. Be prepared. Prepare for a rainy day. There's clouds on the horizon. Love and appreciate y'all. Fly your flags high. Keep your powder dry. Love each other out there. We'll see you next week.
John, the founder of Blackout Coffee, and I started Blackout because I really love coffee. I've always loved coffee, and after traveling so much to Europe, South America, and trying so many different coffees that were so good, and every time I came back to the U.S., I was so disappointed with the coffee, so I figured that I had to do something about it. The biggest difference is on the beans and the roasting process, how we roast it, and how fresh it is. The fresher the roast, the better the quality. Here I have like all of the coffee. It's roasted within 1 to 2 days prior to being shipped. So it literally gets to consumers' house within 3 to 5 days after being roasted. If you like coffee, you have to try ours. It's fresh roasted. It's one of the best beans that we can get, and you will definitely see the difference.
Visit blackoutcoffee.com and use the coupon code REPUB10. That's REPUB10. You're listening to the Republic.